kicked and twisted, trying to get back up despite the fact he should have been stone dead. "McGill!" Leeson screeched nearby. I barely turned in time. I'd forgotten about the rest of the berserkers for a fraction of a second. That had been a mistake. They launched themselves, 1, 2, and 3. I couldn't believe it. There had to be several tons of flesh hurtling airborne over those rocks. It was the second group, the second litter, whatever. My comrades had cut down the first pack that had charged me, but these guys had made an equally dramatic effort. Bracing my feet and crouching low, I put my blades up and extended them toward the enemy. I didn't have much choice. I didn't have time to dodge or hide. Even if they all died this second, they were going to land on me. There was triumph in their eyes. I saw it just before they hit me. I could tell they were happy. They'd done their best, charging and hewing down troops as they came. But that didn't matter to them. All of their hate, all of their ferocity, had been focused on one James McGill. The first guy was torn apart by my blades and Leeson's combined. It was about time he'd helped fix what he'd ordered me to create. Some part of the first one slammed into my back. I think it was a dismembered arm. But I stayed up. Less than a second later, the next two stomped me flat. They howled in victory, a strange, deep sound that no normal human could have produced. I think, looking back, that the only thing that saved me was they'd gotten tangled up on top of me. They couldn't get their swords into play. Either that, or maybe they thought I was dead when I went down onto them. Whatever the case, before they could get organized, my comrades ran to my aid and stabbed and hacked with blades sizzling. A wild melee began right on top of me, with my arms pinned under a half-dozen heavy boots from both sides. People think that combat back in the olden days, the days of knights and charging horses, must have been cleaner and more chivalrous than more modern methods, which generally consist of pecking away at one another at long range. But I can tell you, those romantic notions are dead wrong. There's nothing more bloody and vicious than a battle with blades. Before the last two littermates went down, they managed to cut off a few limbs of their own. Carlos was one of the unlucky ones. He'd been trying to help, but he came in too close. He took a smashing blow on the helmet from the hilt of one giant sword. Before he could recover and get his guard back up, the other one thrust through his visor. He sagged down, dead. The whole fight had probably taken no more than 3 minutes. But to me, it had seemed like a very long time. Leeson and Harris dragged bodies from the pile, checking for life. "Sir," I said from underneath the shivering form of the last enemy in the pile. "You're alive, McGill?" Leeson said in disbelief. He loomed over me and stared into my broken visor. "Right as rain, sir," I said. "But I could use a little help getting this elephant off my chest, if you don't mind."
"Webonier, you shouldn't have drawn your blades. I ordered you not to."
"Yes, sir," I said. "You did that. Are you going to put me on a report?" Leeson gave me a hard stare. He tried to look stern and pissed off, but he couldn't keep it going. He shook his head and laughed.
"You're an ass, McGill."
"Thank you for noticing, sir." The fight was pretty much over by the time I was up on my feet again. Really, it had gone well. The enemy had a critical flaw in their makeup. They'd been conditioned to go into a rage when one of their brothers fell, and I could see how that would work well as long as they held the upper hand. But the minute they were in a bad fight, one where they had to use careful tactics to win, it had become a disadvantage. All along the front line, we'd teased them by taking out one member of each group of nine. That caused a general charge, and our trap had been sprung. I found out that I was the only fool lucky enough to get two charges at once. The only fool that had survived the experience, that is. After the last of the littermates died, the big cannon swept toward us and began slamming us with heavy beams. Boulders cracked and smoked when the invisible beams of heat struck them. I craned my neck looking down toward the lakeshore. Where had that charging group gone? It took me only a second to figure it out. They'd shifted their course and charged into the rocks with us. They'd taken heavy losses, just as we had, while covering open ground. Now, 6 of the cohort's 10 units were battered and hunkering down in the area of broken boulders.
"We're pinned down," Graves said, conferring with his unit commanders. "Listen, you're the last adjunct I have left standing in this unit. Harris, you and the other vet are going to have to double up in the command area. Assume you're in command if you don't see anyone of higher rank within earshot."
"Sir, yes, sir,"
Harris said. I noticed he didn't sound happy with his instructions. He wasn't a man who sought promotions. He didn't want to distinguish himself. He wanted to live and see the sun in the morning. That's it.
"We've learned a lot about this enemy,"
Graves continued, gathering what was left of our unit around him.
"We lost some good people, but they'll be happy to know we won the day in the end. Now we're going to reorganize the 6 units we have here in these rocks. We'll charge up our suits and be ready to move out within an hour. With firing support from the 3 reserve units back at the ridge, the forward 6 will make the last short charge. We'll assault the ship and take it."
A groan went up. I couldn't blame them. We were tired, half down on power, and many of us were injured. Voices rose as everyone discussed this so-called plan. Graves threw his arms up.
"Listen, people. Listen. Shut up."
We quieted. Complaints dropped down to the level of grumbling. I took a moment to look around. Kiwi was still standing, but she looked away from me when I glanced at her. Natasha had been left back at the camp. We'd only taken combatants on the charge. But Carlos, and about a third of the rest, hadn't made it this far. Most of the other units were in even worse shape. All in all, I'd have to say we were half dead and really wanting a break. If we charged the ship now, I doubted we'd have 300 effectives in all 6 units combined, and we still had no idea what was inside that ship to greet us.
"I know you want to hide in these rocks and give it a rest,"
Graves said.
"I understand that. But it's not going to happen, not this time. There were over 100 of their troops in these rocks, and we took them out. That means we've probably destroyed their ground forces. Command thinks we have the enemy on their heels, and we're not going to stop pushing until they break or we do. Just remember, they only have a limited number of squids and freaks in that ship. We can reproduce every one of you that falls. We'll win through attrition, if nothing else."
No one was happy with this speech, not any part of it. Winning through attrition meant we would get the joy of dying over and over again, hoping each time to take down one of the enemy. With luck, we'd break through and finish them. But that ship looked big and mean. There was no telling what they had in there to oppose us. We hadn't even fought a single squid yet. I raised my hand, waggling my fingers. That always seemed to work for Carlos. Graves glanced at me, but waved my hand down.
"Save it, McGill. We're going in."
"Sir?" I asked. "I'm not going to argue about that."
"What are you going to argue about?"
"Sir, I think I have a way of getting us aboard that ship, without everyone out here dying 6 times in the process, that is." Graves stared at me for a second, then he heaved a sigh.
"I know I'm going to regret asking, but what the hell are you talking about, McGill?"
Everyone looked at me. I smiled slowly and began to explain. Chapter 27. I was sure there was a tunnel complex underneath our feet. I'd seen the locals come crawling out of there in half a dozen places. Since the area had been heavily shelled, the tunnels had to have been damaged, but I was equally sure some had survived. "We need to get a few techs up here with equipment," I said, "or at least some of those buzzers specially equipped with sonic sensors." Graves, Harris, and Leeson were all listening to me. Harris rolled his eyes. Leeson looked pissed. Only Graves seemed to be taking me seriously.
"Let's say we get into these tunnels of yours," Graves said. "How the hell does that get us into the ship?"
I cleared my throat. "I've been down there in the tunnels, sir. They go everywhere. With a decent compass to follow, all we have to do is find an exit that's close to the ship. We go into the tunnels, find exits close to the ship, and then we come out like a horde of gophers rushing the ramp."
"You gotta be kidding me, right?" Leeson demanded.
"You don't have a map? You don't have any idea where these tunnels go and where they don't. You're asking us to duck underground into some rabbit warren full of booby traps and hope we can find a way out.
Well, sir, I said, if you'd rather charge that force shield, getting nailed by a cannon the size of a submarine at close range every step, I guess that's up to you guys.
Leeson's face had turned from red to purple during my little speech. I knew I was mouthing off to an officer. He was only steps ahead of me in rank, but he was my direct commander. I opened my mouth again to apologize, but I never got the chance. Harris had seen his opportunity, and he'd jumped right in. He smashed me one on the head. A white light flashed, but I didn't fall or pass out. Legion Varus operated to some degree like the Roman legions of ancient times. Back then, any officer could execute a soldier for disobeying or deserting. Punishment was often physical, including flogging and the like. I knew and understood all that, but I felt like killing Harris anyway. Harris knew it too, but he didn't back down. He didn't apologize. He stepped up and gave me that crazy stare of his.
You settled down yet, kid? Because if you haven't, you can just try it. I can see it in your eyes. I can... Harris, Graves said. Step back, gentlemen.
I had respect for Graves. I had respect for Harris, too, even if he did piss me off at moments like this. Both of us sucked in a breath and took a step back from one another. I realized I'd been visualizing Harris's next death at my own hands. That sort of thing wasn't good for morale. Graves looked from me to Harris and back again.
You know, he said, you two have always been annoying to every officer I put in charge of you. Did you know that? They complain every time. Now I can see what they mean.
Harris seemed surprised.
Just doing my job, Centurion.
Yeah, I know, Graves said.
Sir, can we just investigate the tunnels? I asked. We're in a relatively safe position here. The boulders are stopping the enemy's heavy gun. We have a little time.
But that can't last, Leeson said suddenly. I think he was worried that Graves might listen to me. We've just been giving them more time to set up their defenses.
Graves was busy with his tapper while we argued for a minute or so. When he finally looked up, his face was unreadable.
I just texted McGill's idea to the Primus, he said. She told me I have half an hour to try it out. After that, the general attack begins.
Leeson and Harris were stunned. I tried to look cool, but inside I felt triumphant. That was until I heard the rest of what Graves had to say.
McGill, you're going in. I can't afford an officer or too many troops for that matter, but I need someone senior to vouch for what you find. Harris will handle that. He's in command. Take 3 regulars who can walk and head into the tunnels. Remember, you have 30 minutes, or at least you did 3 minutes ago. Hustle up, people.
I think Harris was in shock. His mouth hung open. He wanted to argue, but he'd just received a direct order, and he was too much of a soldier for that. Graves had a hint of a smile on his face.
A little time together in the hole might do you two some good, he said. You might bond or something.
Or something. I was still thinking of murder, and I knew Harris was doing the same. When Graves moved off to organize his remaining forces, Harris snarled at me and slammed his shoulder into mine as he passed by. Walking along the huddle lines, he tapped 3 regulars, announcing they'd just volunteered. The last volunteer he selected was Keevy. This pissed me off. I figured he'd tapped her just to irritate me. He had to know Keevy and I had an informal thing going on. Everybody did. He figured that if he had to go underground with me, he would damn well bring along my girlfriend, too. Probably if Natasha and Carlos were here, they'd have been picked next. We gathered up our kits and made our way uphill into the highest boulders up near the cliffs. I was in the lead as I'd seen the colonists vanish into these rocks with my own eyes. It was up here when I first saw them do it, I said, crouching and scanning the rocks. Harris nosed up next to me.
Isn't this where that hot little number shot you in the face?
He asked, as if eager to hear the story again. I looked at him and he grinned at me.
She finished me with a knife, but yeah, that's about right. They came up out of slits in the rocks right along here. See those shadows under the boulders? They aren't just shadows. They're narrow tunnel entrances. Harris scoffed, eyeing them.
How the hell is a fully kitted heavy trooper supposed to get into that weasel hole?
Like this, vet, I said, sliding toward it feet first. I almost got stuck, but I made it through. I had to shed my power pack and drag it along with my weapon behind me, but I made it inside.
Don't go running off and make out with some tunnel slut, you hear?
Harris shouted loudly. Keevy was right there at his side, not looking at either of us. Grumbling to myself, I flipped on my lights and had a look around. The tunnel was tight, and it rambled off in several directions. I investigated it while others came down after me, one at a time. My algorithm for searching the tunnel complex was simple enough. I took whatever route seemed to be going downhill, explored until I met a dead end, then turned around and searched the next branch. When we spotted smaller side passages, we sent in one of the others to scout. In the first 10 minutes, we had only one bad moment. A fresh-faced legionnaire named Perez found a booby trap. I'd been of the opinion that the traps were only in the rocks above, set to catch invaders before they entered the tunnel network. But I'd thought wrong. Perez was jabbed right in the butt with a black-tipped stick. The nano-metal was black and shaped like an arrow or maybe a small spear. Heavy troopers have armor over their butts just like the rest of our bodies, but the same weaknesses existed there that existed at our shoulder joints. The tip penetrated the polymer joints at the hips and sank in just enough to graze her skin inside. Hungry nanites flooded her bloodstream. Our suits have good medical systems and can even perform life-saving operations, such as amputations if necessary. But Perez was stuck too close to her vital organs. The nanites quickly coursed through her blood to her heart and consumed her. Perez shivered and gagged. She said it was like having ants inside her guts, huge metal ones. Harris did the honors, frowning. He put his side arm up to the woman's chin. Perez nodded. We couldn't do anything else other than leave her. We didn't have time to wait around until she hemorrhaged and died.
I'll see you next time, girl,
Harris said, almost gently. This kind of surprised me, as I generally thought of him as a heartless prick. His beam glowed, and Perez relaxed, eyes glazing. The nanites were still busy in there, hollowing her out. But at least she didn't have to feel it.
Nasty people, these colonists of yours, McGill.
Harris growled at me. They aren't mine, vet, I said. And remember, they laid these traps for littermates and slavers, not for us. We're new in town. Harris waved for me to get moving. I went back to exploring the tunnels. About 7 minutes later, I was ready to give up. With less than 10 minutes left, we had lost a good fighter, and we still hadn't found anything. Then I saw something new. Something I hadn't expected, but I knew the second I saw it that I should have expected it. I saw a pair of eyes down one long, dark tunnel. They stared back at me from the darkness. Vet, hold up, I called over my shoulder.
What have you got, McGill? Is a snake eating you for dinner now?
Just hold your position, please. Harris and the others grumbled, but they stopped moving and stared after me. I waved at the eyes in the darkness. They blinked, but didn't move. Taking a chance, I scooted closer, but not too fast. Those eyes vanished, retreated. I spotted them again a little farther away. I chewed my cheeks for a second, considering. Hey, I said in a loud whisper. I know you. Talk to me. The eyes appeared again. They were narrow and suspicious.
Why are you here?
Demanded the owner.
You're Stott, aren't you?
I asked.
You don't belong here. I shall kill you again.
My hand slipped to my sidearm. I knew we had a truce going with these people, but here was that same weaselly little bastard who had shot me in the back, bringing on the first death I'd experienced on Dust World. The temptation to return the favor was strong.
We're allies,
he said suddenly, as if following my train of thought. Maybe a lot of people dreamt of killing Stott. If they did, I couldn't blame them for it.
Stott, I said, show me the way out. Show me a path close to the ship, and we'll leave. We only want to get closer to the ship so we can attack.
That's a bad idea, he said.
Do you have a better one?
Yes, said Stott earnestly.
Give them people. Give them a few hundred of your best wives and children. Once their hold is full, they will fly. They won't come back for a long time.
I frowned at him.
Yeah, that's great for you, but what about our people? The ones we send off into slavery?
Stott sidled a little closer, but he was still far out of reach. I sensed that he could dart away any moment if he wanted to.
That's the center of my plan, he said. You don't care about your people. You can just make more. When the littermates and their masters leave, bring the lost ones back to life.
I had to admit it would probably work. Stott made me feel a mixture of disgust and pity, submission, hiding. These were the keys to survival among a beaten people. I shook my head.
We can't do that, I said. We can't make a copy of a person unless we know they're dead.
Oh, that's too bad.
But wait. Just tell them to kill themselves. Nothing could be easier aboard a great ship. All you have to do is disobey enough times, and they will end you. Staying alive is much harder than dying.
Yeah?
What do you know about it?
He sidled closer. I could almost grab him, almost.
I've been aboard,
he said in a whisper. There was a slightly mad gleam in his eyes.
The last time the great ship came, I was found unsuitable and dumped from the ship after failing their tests of the flesh.
Tests of the flesh? Did they check genetics and reject the losers? I guess it made sense. How else could they have bred such specialized versions of humanity?
What's it like on the ship?
I asked.
It's madness. It's like the worst of your dreams, where you can't awaken.
I nodded. Well, Stott, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but we're Earthmen. We fight, we don't surrender. If someone tries to capture us, it is the same as trying to kill us. Either way, we fight to the death. Just tell me how to get close to them, and we'll leave you alone. Stott looked thoughtful.
You experienced Della, didn't you?
He asked me.
She told me you did. She said I would never be considered again, and to stop asking.
Yeah, well, look, are you going to help or not? A strange light came into his face.
I think I will, he said. I came here to kill you, you know. But that was before I knew what you wanted in my world. Now that I understand, I have a better fate for you than the screaming death.
That's great. Listen, I have to...
Don't go that way,
Stott whispered as I turned to continue my exploration.
Why not? That way lays the next trap. I set many of them. You'll never get out of here without my help.
I stared at him. You set the traps? Inside your own tunnels? He nodded slowly. I pulled out my gun. I should have shot this bastard the second I'd seen him. He'd managed to kill me once, and now Perez. He didn't deserve to live.
I see you understand, Stott said. But you don't fully understand. I don't want you to find my traps now. I want you to find the ship. I want you to go inside. I want you to be tested and taken from this world and never brought back to life.
Stott was right. I did finally understand him. He wanted me to find the way to the alien ship. He wanted me to do it so I could be tormented and abused the way he had been at some point. I pointed my gun at him and gestured with it meaningfully.
Lead the way. Show me how to get to the ship. I will find the closest exit. I know them all. Better than most.
Stott, I said as I followed him and called for Harris and the others to follow me.
If you screw me, I want you to know I'm going to burn you down before you can get away.
Stott laughed. It was a weird, haunted sound.
Don't worry. I don't have to harm you. to kill a fool. All one has to do is lead him to a cliff. You're a special fool, since you demand to be guided there. I followed him through dark tunnels for several minutes. As I went, I dropped beepers, small devices that marked the path for the rest of the troops I hoped would follow soon. Stott occasionally giggled, and he crept along on all fours as often as not. As I followed him deeper, going downhill toward the giant ship, I had to wonder which one of us was the crazy one. I didn't trust our guide. How could I? The man had shot me in the back only a few days ago. I'd caught him planting booby traps that had already killed one of my comrades. What's more, he knew about Della and me. Our little get-together in the hot springs had become front-page news. That alone might be enough for him to try his luck at killing me again. Who knew? Maybe it would stick this time around. But I didn't have a choice in the matter. We had to find a way out of these tunnels that reached closer to the ship. Either that, or my commanders were going to send us on an insane charge right at that shield. We'd squeeze through the dome of force, dying as we went, and probably finish up on the ramp in a heap of fried meat. I knew Stott might be leading us to our deaths, but I felt like I had to take the chance. Hell, we were all about to die anyway. At least this way, I figured there was hope. So I led the way. I didn't tell Harris about Stott, who he was, and what kind of a sneaky little psychotic bastard he really was. I figured they might turn around if I did, and I wouldn't have blamed them for it. We pressed ahead into the darkness. Every time dirt sifted down from the crumbling roof of the tunnels, dribbling onto my helmet or armored back, I figured that was it. The cave-in was finally letting go, and I'd screwed up royally. But instead, the tunnels just went on and on. When I was just about to give up, and Harris was reminding me we only had a few minutes left, Stott halted. He felt around in the dark. I cranked up the beams of my helmet lights and tried to peer past him, but I couldn't. The tunnel had ended. "What's this crap?" I demanded. We were down on our hands and knees now because the ceiling was low. I scrambled up to Stott and grabbed him around the throat with steel gauntlets. He began keening, sounding like a rabbit in a snare.
"Hey, hey,"
Harris said, coming up behind me and giving me a shove.
"What the hell is wrong with you now, McGill?"
"He led us into a dead end. There's nothing here."
"Why the hell would he do that?"
"He hates me. I..."
Kiwi came up to us then and kicked me.
"You screwed his girlfriend, didn't you?" she demanded. "That's why he's here. That's why he came looking for you in your crazy love tunnels. This is bullshit, Harris. We've got to get back to the surface and rejoin our unit. The attack will come soon, and we'll be stuck down here."
I pushed Kiwi off of me. "It's not that way at all," I said. "But I do think he screwed us over."
"This is just like when you came down here to find your new girlfriend," Kiwi went on. "Why die in battle if you can have a little fun in the dark instead? I thought you were moving kind of fast. I bet you were trying to lose the rest of us in this maze. Admit it."
Kiwi wasn't always a reasonable person. When she got jealous, every butt in sight got a dose of her foot. Harris pushed the two of us apart.
"Shut up," he roared. "Look up, you fools."
We did, and gaped at what we saw. There was a crack, not much more than a slit, in the limestone ceiling. Stott had jammed himself into it and was squeezing upward as we watched.
"He's getting away," Kiwi said.
Harris bashed her one on the helmet.
"Who cares? That's got to be the way out. Kiwi, you're the smallest. Get up there after him. Scout and report. You've got 1 minute. McGill, unlimber that cannon of yours. We can't get out through this exit if it's so small. I'll report in. If Graves approves, we'll melt the walls back a little and make more room."
"You really think he's found it, vet?"
I asked, incredulous. He gave me a quizzical frown.
"Was Kiwi right, boy? Were you really down here looking for booty the whole time? Of course he's found it. What the hell else are we doing down here?"
"Right," I said, pawing at my kit. I had to clear off the dust, connect the cables, and test fire the unit. I checked the power levels. They looked good. In the meantime, Harris used a guide wire we left in our wake to talk to Graves. Radio didn't seem to want to penetrate these stone walls. Kiwi crept up the hole after Stott, cursing and squirming.
"I'm stuck,"
she said, sending down a cascade of dust into our faces.
"Oh, shit, I'm stuck."
"Calm down," Harris said. "What do you see up there?"
Not much. There's light ahead. Must be daylight. The colonist weasel is gone."
"Follow him."
"I won't be able to get back."
"That's an order."
More squirming, churning, and dust. I could tell she'd turned on her exoskeleton and goosed the power. Her limbs churned with strength she couldn't have mustered otherwise.
"I hate you, McGill,"
she called down.
"Join the club, girl," Harris answered. "Any progress?"
"Yeah, I'm at the top. I'm under some kind of big rock. We can't charge out of here. We won't be able to move fast enough. They'll nail each of us as we come out once they figure out where the exit is."
"What about our guide?" I called.
"He's... hold on, I see him. They've got him. I think he tried to run, and two slavers ran him down. Permission to fire, vet?"
"Denied," Harris said firmly. "We can't give away our position. We aren't ready."
I shook my head. Despite my dislike of Stott, I felt a little sorry for him. His worst fears had been realized. He'd been caught and dragged into that ship of nightmares again. Whatever he'd done in the past, I knew he had only one life to give. He'd played us fairly.
"Vet, we've got to go after him," I said.
"You crazy?" Harris asked. "I thought you hated him anyway."
"Yeah, but he's a civvy, and he did what he said. He played his part."
"Okay, then. You want to go up there, McGill? Be my guest."
I stood and shoved myself up into the tunnel. It really was a tight squeeze. Harris yanked me back down.
"I was kidding, fool. The only way you're getting your little buddy back alive is when we take this ship. Focus on that. And stop with the suicidal heroics. Man, if there is anything I can't stand, it's a goddamn hero."
He fumed and complained like that until Graves called back with the verdict. Harris listened, and his face fell.
"You sure, sir? Absolutely sure.
It's just that I can't advise..."
"Yes, sir."
"What?"
I asked him.
Harris looked depressed.
"It's a go. Start burning this tunnel wider. Graves is sending our whole unit down here, and two more behind it. They figure it's a better shot than charging across open land. We're going to storm your ship, McGill, using this pathetic gopher hole. I hope you're happy."
I smiled at him. "Actually, Vet, I am." Chapter 28. The next few minutes stretched into 20, then became an hour. By the time we were prepped and ready to go, I figured we might as well have dug our own tunnel to the ship. What really helped finish the job was a drone team that had come along with one of the units in the second wave. They had to crawl on their bellies to burrow through the tunnels. When they came to a spot that was too narrow, their usefulness became even more apparent. They could dig. We usually use drones to move earth, build bunkers, or carry heavy loads over rough ground. But with careful instruction and operators who knew their business, they could be used as tunneling machines. The walls at my end of the tunnel were already as slick as glass due to countless bursts from my plasma tube. It had helped, but wasn't an elegant solution. Digging with a cannon was kind of like, well, digging with a cannon. Messy, dangerous, and only half effective. The mechanical pigs did a much better job. They could really tear apart loose earth and softer types of stone. Fortunately, Dust World's crust seemed to consist of little else. I'd come to believe there wasn't much in the way of hard granite on this planet. Whatever wasn't sand was sandstone, limestone, or clay. The aliens in their ship above us plotted and waited for us to come out of the rocks they'd cornered us in. They thought they had the upper hand. Rather than attack us, they were waiting for us to make the next move. As we geared up to explode back out onto the surface, I sincerely hoped the aliens had no clue as to how we planned to hit them next. The only good thing about the delay was that it gave me time to recharge my pack and replenish my ammo. After about 90 minutes of digging and massing up in the tunnels, Graves finally made a fateful announcement.
Good news, people, he began.
Honest to God, the man's voice sounded like he really did think he was relaying good news.
Third Unit has been given the honor of going in first. The entire cohort will follow up on our charge. The Primus herself insisted our unit was to lead the way.
That bitch, Leeson complained in the dark nearby. I had to agree with Leeson's assessment. Going first up a ramp into an alien ship full of vicious squids and their slave troops didn't sound like an honor to me. Harris clapped his gauntlets together, making a ringing sound that echoed painfully from the tight walls of the tunnel.
Listen up, he boomed.
Adjunct Leeson sidled forward like a crab and crouched in the middle of our platoon. There were less than 20 of us left. I found myself wishing Carlos had survived long enough to see this thing through to the end with me.
This is do or die, people. Maybe both. We're going up and out of that hole above your heads. The buzzers have reported back that there is a handy circle of rocks and will probably be under the firing cone of their main gun. The second you see daylight, spread out and head for cover in every direction. Our initial mission is to set up firing positions. We'll be playing over watch for the rest of the troops as they come boiling up out of this anthill behind us.
We gave him a ragged cheer, as he seemed to be expecting it. The sound was lackluster, but he didn't make any issue of it.
Now, this next part is important. If the enemy doesn't seem to notice our movements, don't fire on them. I repeat, do not engage unless we're attacked first. Command is hoping for a surprise. We want every trooper up on the surface before we hit them, if possible.
Sir? I asked. The buzzers didn't show there was enough room in that circle of rocks for all the troops. Leeson looked at me with dark eyes.
Yeah, I would agree. But you have your orders. Just set up and cover everyone coming up to the surface.
But, sir, I said, pressing the point, I'd been watching the vids from the buzzers for nearly an hour now, having had little else to do. A fast strike might be better.
For the sake of every legionnaire that ever died on an alien rock like this, I want you to shut up and follow orders, McGill. Shock us all just this once.
Glory Hound,
said someone off to my left. I thought it might have been Keevy, but I hoped not. She knew me better than that.
Yes, sir, I said with a sigh.
A timer beeped a 30-second warning in my ear. My tapper had been engaged remotely and was counting down the seconds until we were to make our first push up to the surface. I had to admit I was feeling a little keyed up. Maybe it was sitting down here in close quarters, or maybe it was the complete insanity of what we were about to do. I'm sure men had felt like this throughout history while gearing up to storm a beach, charge up a fortified hill, or drop onto an alien world. You couldn't help but sense your heart was hammering in your chest until it felt like it was coming out of your mouth. Finally, it was go time. Everyone's beeper sang, and we were all up and rushing through the fresh dug tunnel to the surface. I was about the seventh man to reach daylight. We hadn't dared to put scouts up ahead of time, relying on the vids from our buzzers to do that job. The whole point of this exercise was to catch the enemy off guard. My legs were stiff from crouching for so long, but I forced them to work when I reached the surface, goosing the power in my suit and transferring it to my legs. I had my cannon on my shoulder, bouncing and clanking. Seeing a pile of loose rocks, about as big as a house, I broke left and rushed to cover, putting the stones between me and the ship. The enemy wasn't caught napping, unfortunately. I don't think they knew we were coming, but they figured it out in 2 minutes flat. A squad of slavers was nearby, and they set up a screeching, warbling sound. They lifted their huge hands to their pursed mouths and called toward the ramp of the ship, which I now realized was a fair distance away. The only good news, as I saw it, was that we were inside the force dome, and it looked like their main gun couldn't dip down enough to hit us here so close to the hull. I threw myself flat and set up my weapon, cranking it to long range since there didn't seem to be any immediate resistance. Behind me, troops kept bubbling up out of the ground at a rate of one every 3 or 4 seconds. Harris came close and threw himself down beside me. He looked at what I was doing with a suspicious frown.
McGill, have you seen any incoming shots fired yet?
No, sir, I said.
But those slavers over there have seen us, I'm sure of it. He gave me a hard stare, then looked at the enemy in question.
There were four of them in a cluster. They were standing tall, looking like meerkats, straining and sniffing the air.
They don't see us yet, he said. They probably smell us, though.
I sighted on the closest, most exposed man. At this range, I couldn't miss with a tight burst. Harris bashed my shoulders, spoiling my aim.
What the hell are you doing?
Preparing to fire should the need arise. Could you get your gauntlet off my pack, vet? Harris clearly suspected me of all sorts of craziness. I felt wronged. Sure, I'd gone off track now and then, but to assume I'd disobey a direct order right off, that didn't seem right.
Okay, he said, digging out his scope. I'll sight for you.
The happy period of cooperation lasted about a minute longer. After that, events changed on the battlefield around us. Two more ramps extended silently from the ship. One was far off to our left. The other was closer to amidships on the huge vessel. It was immediately clear to everyone present that the enemy had noticed our position and was responding to it. They decided to up the ante. Down each of these three ramps came six squads of heavy troopers. The littermates marched in strict box formation with their lockstep, easy pace. But it was the immense creatures that followed the littermates that surprised us. They were true giants. There's just no other word one could apply to these monsters. They were 20 feet high and almost as broad as they were tall. They moved like sumo wrestlers and carried huge guns that were grafted onto their arms. Staring at these three beings, one of which had emerged from the ship at the top of each ramp, I realized the giants only had one serviceable hand each. The other had been removed and replaced with a weapon that dwarfed my own plasma cannon.
Giants, Harris said, staring. They bred giants. I don't friggin' believe it.
I didn't either at first, but there they were, blinking and yawning with wet mouths full of jagged teeth.
Hold your fire,
Graves roared in my earpiece. All up and down the encircling rocks, troopers were now aiming their weapons toward the enemy carefully. Almost everyone aimed at the giants. They were terrifying.
I see a white flag, Graves said. Let's give them a chance.
I craned my neck, and sure enough, the team of slavers that had first scented us came galloping forward on all fours. The leader, who I'd been targeting, had a white flag up, and it whipped in the wind as the group of four approached us. Such strange creatures. They disgusted and intrigued me at the same time. Did they think like we did? Did they experience feelings like love and sadness or just rage? They were like specially bred dogs, but molded by direct genetic manipulation rather than selective breeding. Anne Grant had told me there couldn't have been enough generations for the squids to change a human's physiology so drastically. They must have spliced in the traits they wanted artificially to produce these abominations. Flapping ears spread wide, then dropped as they gathered not 100 feet from my position. The leader of the slavers stood taller than the rest, rearing up on his hind legs, while the others moved restlessly behind him on all fours.
We speak!
Shouted the leader.
We speak!
I looked up and down the line. Who the hell was going to... But then I saw him. Graves rose up from our line and marched calmly out to meet the skinny who called to us. I was proud to see he didn't cower. He looked as if he were taking a stroll in the park. I doubted I could have looked so self-assured, and I was doubly glad it was Graves who had stepped forward rather than me.
I'll talk to you, Graves said. Tell me what you want.
I glanced over my shoulder and smiled. While Graves talked peace with these freaks, our troops were still coming out of that hole. We were starting to get crowded among the rocks, and our pigs were already throwing up fresh barriers at the open spots by tilting up boulders to block laser bolts and other incoming fire, just in case this little chat went badly. Watching all this, I understood Graves's motivation. He was playing for time.
You must drop your stingers, said the skinny with a fluting voice that was strangely high-pitched
for a being of his size.
"Stingers! Not allowed in the ship!"
"Stingers?" Graves asked mildly. "You mean our guns?"
He drew his sidearm, but didn't point it at the slaver. In reaction, the slaver squirmed and milled uncomfortably.
"Stingers must be cast aside. It is commanded, and it must be so. Otherwise, you will not be able to stay alive in the ship."
Graves smiled.
"What if we don't want to live in your ship?"
"Wasteful,"
said the slaver, suddenly spitting a gob of juice on the sands.
"Unpleasant. Hopeless."
Graves shook his head.
"We enjoy our freedom. We will not throw down our weapons. We will not walk aboard your ship like sheep."
The slaver tossed his head and looked at his fellows, who made chattering sounds. I realized they were amused. The leader turned back, and his face suggested he was speaking to a lost child who did not yet understand the way of things.
"There is no freedom. You live here only because the masters allow it. Today is the day your herd must be gathered and taken home again. Do not waste your lives. You are of value to the masters only when you serve them."
"I see we don't understand one another," Graves said. "We will never give in to your demands. We are not native to this world. We are from outside this star system. Our empire is vast, much greater than you or your masters can imagine."
More twittering and grunts ensued. Finally, the slaver turned his attention back to the tiny man at his feet.
"The masters know of your empire. It is sick and weak. You are to be our slaves now, not theirs."
For the first time, Graves didn't answer right away. I was stunned as well. Could these aliens and their slaves know about the Galactics? If so, why didn't they show the proper fear and respect that extinction should rightly instill in any thinking being? I turned to look at Harris, and he glanced back at me. We were both frowning, but we didn't say anything. Either these aliens were crazy, or they knew something we didn't. Graves decided to make another attempt.
"Be that as it may," he said, "let's talk about the here and now. We are strong, not weak. We are also your brothers, tall man. Look at me. I'm human, just as you are. Your masters have changed your form, but I suspect there is a strong heart beating in your breast, a brave heart."
The towering slaver eyed Graves curiously.
"Your talk is pointless. What must be is preordained. The will of the masters is beyond question. I know you and I are similar beasts, but we are still beasts, nothing more."
"No," Graves said firmly. "We're much more than that. We're brothers. I've listened to your demands. Now you listen to mine. Turn around. Board your ship and rebel against your masters. Use the giants that stand on the ramps. Command them. Take this ship for your own. We will help you kill your masters, and you will all be free. You can have valleys here to live in if you want."
All the slavers generated blatting sounds with their overly large noses. Their ears flapped and splayed. I could tell they were shocked.
"I will attempt to explain again,"
the leader said carefully, as if Graves were a slow child.
"First, you must lay down your stingers. Then you will be allowed to board our ship. If you do not do this, you must be killed."
I thought Graves had demonstrated a great deal of patience up until now, but I could tell he'd had enough. He shook his head.
"Go," he said. "Go back to your ship before we kill you."
The face of the slaver darkened.
"Insulting beast," he said.
Then his great hand lashed down and struck Graves.
My centurion had his visor lifted to talk to the enemy more easily. The blow caught him full in the face. Graves tumbled, almost doing a backflip. That was enough for me. I fired. My beam caught the slaver in the neck, and his head popped off and splatted down into the dust at his own feet, smoking and steaming. The tufts of curly hair circling his head caught fire briefly, filling the air with an acrid smoke. The other three broke and ran off. Harris and Leeson, along with the other officers, stood up and roared for calm. No one else fired. I didn't wait to find out what my commanders thought of my action. I rushed up to Graves, grabbed him under the arms, and dragged him back to the protective line of rocks. His head was lolling, and I could tell right off his neck was broken. He was having difficulty breathing, but his eyes rolled around to stare at me.
"Did you kill him?"
he rasped.
"Yeah,"
I said. Graves chuckled, coughed wetly, then managed to control it.
"I knew it was you who shot him."
With that final comment, my centurion died. I fully expected Leeson, Harris, and the rest of them to chew me out for firing my weapon without authorization, but they didn't. They didn't say a word. I think they were all secretly happy I'd done it. The truce lasted about 2 more minutes. We watched the enemy delegation of skinnies reach the ship and vanish. The giants at the top of the ramps went into motion then, tromping to the bottom. The heavy troopers moved to cover, staying in their tight groups of 9. They encircled our position, deploying as we watched. "Are we going to do this or not?" I demanded of Harris. He shrugged hopelessly. We were way off the game plan, and no one seemed to know what to do next. Our chance to surprise the enemy had long since faded. Adjunct Leeson walked to my position and crouched beside me.
"McGill, you trigger-happy cuss, I've got a suggestion for you."
"What's that, sir?"
Leeson gestured toward the enemy line.
"Why don't you go nuts and poke a hole in one of those giant bellies? I almost feel sorry for those big bastards. They look scary enough, but they're really just walking targets."
I frowned. "Is that an order, sir?"
"No. But you're always pulling crap like that, aren't you? I'm hoping you feel like doing it."
"Why aren't we all attacking?"
He grunted in disgust. "The Primus became overjoyed with the idea that we might end this fight with the aliens peacefully. The surviving Centurions have reported back to her that the effort to talk to the freaks failed, but she hasn't given the go order yet. She's still hoping."
I looked back over my shoulder. The distant ridge that hid our main camp was about 2 kilometers away. I figured the Primus was back there second-guessing everything we were doing up here on the front line.
"I get it," I said. "You want me to go rogue and take the blame for starting this battle, is that it?"
"Exactly."
I turned away from him and sighted my weapon on the closest giant, but I didn't fire.
"Forget it, sir," I said. "Man up and do it your damn self."
Leeson cursed me and kicked dirt on the back of my armor. I smiled inside my helmet.
"Shit, McGill. You're even annoying when you're following orders. Fine."
Leeson drew his sidearm and shot the nearest giant in the belly. It was a nice shot, actually. I could see the impact point perfectly. But instead of burning a hole that revealed red guts inside, the laser bolt splashed and split apart into shimmering flashes of color.
"I'll be damned," Leeson said. "The giants have body shields."
He didn't have time to say anything else, because after that, all hell broke loose. Chapter 29 When we had power to spare, any heavy trooper suit could generate a thin body shield. They weren't really useful in prolonged fights, however, as they drained your reserves too fast. We couldn't use them when we were charging across a field, either, because we needed every kilowatt to operate our motor systems. Although we hadn't used shields much in this conflict, it was still a shock to see the enemy had the technology at all. These squids weren't losers, I had to say that for them. As far as I could tell, they didn't have revival machines, but they had pretty good tech otherwise. After Leeson discharged his weapon and lit up one of the giants, there was about a 2-second pause. And then it seemed like everyone on the field began hosing the other side with indiscriminate fire. The giant he'd hit initially looked down stupidly at his belly, which was undamaged but sparkling.
He touched the area, then his quizzical expression turned to one of dark rage. He lifted the heavy projector attached to his arm and blazed power in our direction. Rocks popped and sand melted to glass. We hunkered down as the beam swept over us, and no one died immediately. The moment the beam had rolled by, I took aim and fired my cannon back at the enemy lines. Leeson was right, of course. I did want to burn these freaks and run them off the planet. This was the moment I'd been waiting for. But I'd gotten tired of being the only guy who took drastic action and catching hell for it later, so I'd let the adjunct go first this time. "Firing center!" I shouted, warning the troopers around me. Plasma cannons had a serious backblast, and more than one legionnaire had been crisped by trotting behind a weaponeer at the wrong moment. My beam didn't splash against the giant's shield. I decided to light up the squad of littermates at his feet instead. I nailed one full in the chest, slagging his armor and dropping him right there on the ramp. I have to tell you, it was the best feeling I'd had all day. The other littermates immediately went ape and charged. That was enough to change the tune for the officers around me. They'd been shouting orders to hold our fire, except for Leeson. They recalibrated their minds in a hurry when they saw those crazed heavy troopers bounding across the short span of sand between our makeshift defensive position and the ship's ramps. All of a sudden, the air was alive with bolts of power mixed in with a few heavy projectiles. A missile-launching team on our side let loose from the middle of our circle of rocks, and they aimed in the same direction I had. The very giant that had started all this was hit hard. His shield buckled, going burnt orange and flickering. He was knocked flat by the blast, but he got up again. I was stunned. If a direct hit from a portable missile battery couldn't take one of these guys down, this was going to be interesting. All nine squads of littermates were in the fight at this point. Most of the squads were advancing at a stately pace as if they were taking a stroll in the park. They fired their weapons sporadically, spanging bullets off our rocks. When one of those explosive rounds hit one of our men square on, it took him out as often as not. But as we poured back fire into their advancing squares, eventually we knocked out one of them. And the rest predictably charged. After that, we took most of them down before they reached us. When the survivors did manage to make it to our lines, a desperate melee began. I watched as troopers on both sides were cut apart and gutted in their shining armor. I stood up and fired my cannon point blank. I took out a charging, bug-eyed berserker who was knocked on his smoldering ass, stone dead. There wasn't any time to congratulate myself. It seemed that the sky had darkened. I turned and gaped upward. One of the giants had survived, towering over my clump of rocks. He had a sword in one hand, which he used to thrust and cut. I saw men get hit by that thing. It was like being struck by a blade the size of a car. Limbs were shorn off and troopers fell, howling. The giant's projectors swept the scene methodically, burning victims as they crawled away. An idiot's grin rode his face, as if he was enjoying this butchery. His personal shield sparkled like it was in a rainstorm, deflecting dozens of light incoming fire. Staggering backward, I shook my cannon and cursed at it. The recycle time on these units seemed like an eternity when you were about to die. Finally, a green indicator LED flickered on, and I shouldered my weapon. Somehow, I think the giant sensed I was about to take him out. His sword arm swept forward. I fired. I think I'd been holding the trigger down, in fact, for several long seconds. Finally, the chamber cleared, and the weapon released a fresh gush of energy. Getting hammered by a plasma cannon isn't like being hit by a laser pistol. Still, I thought it would have been less effective if the giant hadn't been recently hit by a missile. These force fields were touchy, and it took a minute or two after a hard strike for them to settle down, turn glassy, and be fully integrated again. The field collapsed, and my beam made it through. I held the trigger down, ignoring overcharge warnings and heat indicators. I had to keep the beam going until the job was done. The giant's chest was a smoking ruin before I let go of that trigger. He toppled backward, scattering a group of my comrades who'd been trying to come in behind him to hamstring him. They never got the chance. He was dead before he hit the rocks. A heavy hand clapped me on the shoulder. "Good job, McGill," Harris said. Leeson walked up and surveyed the scene. The enemy charge had broken, and they'd been killed down to the last man. On our own side, we'd lost about 50 troops. "The revival machines are going to be busy tonight," I said. Leeson shook his head seriously.
"No, I don't think so. The enemy took out our..."